crazy and jealous persona coming from? Was Spirit's darkness simply growing in intensity so that it spread to both of us? Were we splitting it?
Rose.
Huh. I glanced up from where I'd been staring blankly at the TV. Dennis was looking down at me, his cell phone in his hand.
Tamara had to work late. She's ready to go now, but...
He nodded toward the window. The sun was almost down. The sky purple with only a little orange in the horizon. Tamara worked within walking distance, and while there probably wasn't any real danger, I didn't want her out alone after sunset. I stood up. Come on, we'll go get her. To Lev and Archer, I said. You guys can stay here. Dennis and I walked the half mile to the small office where Tamara worked. She did assorted clerical tasks, like filing and copying, and there had apparently been some project that kept her there late tonight. We met her at the door and walked back to the apartment without incident, talking animatedly about our hunting plans for the evening. When we reached Tamara's building, I heard a strange wailing across the street. We all turned, and Dennis chuckled. Good God, it's that crazy woman again, I muttered. Tamara didn't live in a bad part of town, but, as in any city, there were homeless people and panhandlers. The woman we watched was almost as ancient as Yeva, and she regularly walked up and down the street, muttering to herself. Today, she lay on her back on the sidewalk, making strange noises while waving her limbs like a turtle. Is she hurt? I asked.
Nope, just crazy, said Dennis.
He and Tamara turned to go inside, but some soft part of me couldn't abandon her. I sighed. I'll be right in. The street was quiet, aside from the old lady, and I cut across without fear of traffic. Reaching the woman, I held out my hand to help her out, trying not to think about how dirty hers was. Like Dennis had said, she merely appeared to be in crazy mode today. She wasn't hurt. She'd apparently just decided to lie down. I tossed the word crazy around a lot when it came to Lissa and me, but this was truly crazy. I really, really hoped Spirit never took us this far. The homeless lady looked surprised at the help but took my hand and began talking excitedly in Russian. When she tried to hug me in gratitude, I stepped back and held up my hands in the international back-off signal. She did indeed back off, but continued chatting happily. She grabbed the sides of her long coat and held them out like a ballroom skirt and began spinning around and singing. I laughed, surprised that in my grim world, this would cheer me up. I started to cross back over to Tamara's place. The old woman stopped dancing and began talking happily to me again. Sorry, I have to go, I told her. It didn't seem to register. Then she froze mid-sentence. Her expression gave me warning, only half a millisecond before my nausea did. In one fluid motion, I spun around to face what was behind me, pulling my stake out as I moved. There was a Strigoi there, tall and imposing, having sneaked up while I was distracted. Stupid, stupid. I'd refused to let Tamara walk home alone, but I'd never even considered danger right outside my... No. I wasn't sure if I said the word or thought it. It didn't matter. The only thing that mattered just then was what my eyes saw before me. Or rather, what my eyes thought they saw. Because surely, surely I had to be imagining this. It couldn't be real. Not after all this time. Dimitri. I knew him instantly, even though he'd changed. I think in a crowd of a million people, I would have recognized him. The connection between us would allow nothing else, and after being deprived of him for so long, I drank in every feature. The dark, chin-length hair, worn loose tonight and curling slightly around his face. The familiar set of lips, quirked now in an amused yet chilling smile. He even wore the duster he always wore. The long leather coat that could have come straight out of a cowboy movie. And then, there were the Strigoi features. His dark eyes, the eyes I loved, ringed in red. The pale, pale, death-white skin. In life, his complexion had been as tanned as mine, thanks to so much time outdoors. If he opened his mouth, I knew I'd see fangs. My whole assessment took place in the blink of an eye. I'd reacted fast when I'd felt him. Faster than he probably expected. I still had the element of surprise, my stake poised and ready. It was perfectly lined up with his heart. I could tell then and there that I could make the hit faster than he could defend. But the eyes. Oh, God, the eyes. Even with that sickening red ring around his pupils, his eyes still reminded me of the Dmitri I'd known. The look in his eyes, the soulless, malicious gleam that was nothing like him. But there was just enough resemblance to stir my heart, to overwhelm my senses and feelings. My stake was ready. All I had to do was keep swinging to make the kill. I had momentum on my side. But I couldn't. I just needed a few more seconds. A few more seconds to drink him in before I killed him. And that's when he spoke. Rosa. His voice had that same wonderful lowness, the same accent. It was all just colder. You forgot my first lesson. Don't hesitate. I just barely saw his fist striking out toward my head. And then, I saw nothing at all. Chapter 18. Unsurprisingly, I woke up with a headache. For a few addled seconds, I had no idea what had happened or where I was. As drowsiness wore off, the events on the street came slamming back to me. I sat upright, all of my defenses kicking into action, despite the slight wooziness in my head. Time to figure out where I was now. I sat up on an enormous bed in a darkened room. No, not just a room, more like a suite or a studio. I'd thought the hotel in St. Petersburg was opulent, but this blew it away. The half of the studio I sat in contained the bed and usual bedroom accessories, a dresser, nightstands, etc. The other half looked like a living room area, with a couch and a television. Shelves were built into the walls, all of them filled with books. Off to my right was a short hall with a door at the end, probably a bathroom. On my other side was a large picture window, tinted as Maroi windows often were. This one had more tint than any I'd ever seen. It was almost solid black, nearly impossible to see through. Only the fact that I could differentiate the sky from the horizon, after a fair amount of squinting, let me know it was daytime out there. I slid off the bed, my senses on high alert as I tried to assess my danger. My stomach felt fine. There were no Strigoi in the area. That didn't necessarily rule out some other person, however. I couldn't take anything for granted. Doing so was what had gotten me in trouble on the street. There was no time to ponder that, though. Not quite yet. If I did, my resolve here was going to falter. Sliding off the bed, I reached into my coat pocket for the stake. Gone, of course. I saw nothing else nearby that would pass as a weapon, meaning I'd have to rely on my own body to do my fighting. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught sight of a light switch on the wall. I flipped it on and froze, waiting to see what, or who, the overhead lights would unveil. Nothing unusual. No one else. Immediately, I did the first obvious thing and checked the door. It was locked, as I'd expected, and the only way of opening it was a numeric keypad. Plus, it was heavy and made of what looked like steel. It reminded me of a fire door. There was no getting past it, so I turned back around to continue my exploration. It was actually kind of ironic. A lot of my classes had gone over detailed ways of checking out a place. I'd always hated those. I'd wanted to learn about fighting. Now it appeared those lessons that had seemed useless at the time had real purpose. The light had brought the suite's objects into sharper relief. The bed was covered in an ivory satin duvet, filled to maximum fluffiness with down. Creeping over to the living room, I saw that the TV was nice. Really nice. Large screen plasma. It looked brand new. The couches were nice too, covered in matte green leather. It was an unusual color choice for leather, but it worked. All of the furniture in the place, tables, desk, dresser, was made of a smooth, polished black wood. In a corner of the living room, I saw a small refrigerator. Kneeling down, I opened it up to find bottled water and juice, assorted fruits, and bags of perfectly cut cheeses. On top of the refrigerator was more snack-type food, nuts, crackers, and some type of glazed pastry. My stomach growled at the sight of it, but no way was I going to eat anything in this place. The bathroom was done in the same style as the rest of the studio. The shower and large jacuzzi tub were made of black polished marble, and little soaps and shampoos lined the counter. A larger mirror hung over the sink, except it wasn't actually hanging. It was embedded so tightly into the wall that there was absolutely no way it could be removed. The material was strange, too. It looked more like reflective metal than glass. At first, I thought that was strange, until I raced back out to the main room and looked around. There was absolutely nothing here that could be turned into a weapon. The TV was too big to move or break, short of cracking the screen, which looked like it was made of some high-tech plastic. There was no glass in any of the tables. The shelves were embedded, the bottles in the refrigerator were all plastic, and the window... I ran over to it, feeling along its edges. Like the mirror, it was fitted perfectly into the wall. There were no panes. It was one smooth piece. Squinting again, I finally got a detailed view of my outer surroundings and saw nothing. The land appeared to be rolling plains with only a few scattered trees. It reminded me of the wilderness I'd traveled while going to Baia. I was no longer in Novosibirsk, apparently, and peering down, I saw that I was fairly high up. Fourth floor, maybe. Whatever it was too high to jump without breaking a limb. Still, I had to take some sort of action. I couldn't just sit here. I picked up the desk's chair and slammed it into the window, and achieved little effect on either the chair or the glass. Jesus Christ, I muttered. I tried three more times and still had no luck. It was like they were both made of steel. Maybe the glass was some kind of bulletproof industrial-strength stuff, and the chair, well, hell if I knew. It was all one piece of wood and showed no signs of splintering, even after what I'd just put it through. But since I'd spent my whole life doing things that weren't that reasonable, I kept trying to break the glass. I was on my fifth try when my stomach warned me of a Strigoi's approach. Spinning around, I kept a hold of the chair and charged the door. It opened, and I slammed into the intruder, with the chair's legs pointing out. It was Dimitri. Those same conflicted feelings I'd felt on the street returned to me. Love mingled with terror. This time, I pushed through the love, not flinching in my attack. Not that it did much good. Hitting him was like hitting the window. He shoved me back and I staggered, still holding onto the chair. I kept my balance and charged once more. This time, when we collided, he grabbed a hold of the chair and ripped it from my hands. He then tossed it into the wall, like it weighed nothing. Without that meager weapon, it was back to relying on my own body's strength. I'd been doing it for the last couple of weeks with our Strigoi questioning. This should have been the same. Of course, I'd had four other people then as backup, and none of those Strigoi had been Dimitri. Even as a Dampier, he'd been hard to beat. Now he was just as skilled, only faster and stronger. He also knew all my moves, seeing as he'd taught them to me. It was almost impossible to surprise him. But just like with the window, I couldn't stay inactive. I was trapped in a room. The fact that it was a big, luxurious room didn't matter. With a Strigoi. A Strigoi. That's what I had to keep telling myself. There was a Strigoi in here, not Dimitri. Everything I'd told Dennis and the others applied here. Be smart. Be vigilant. Defend yourself. Ross, he said, deflecting one of my kicks effortlessly. You're wasting time. Stop. Oh, that voice. Dimitri's voice. The voice I heard when I fell asleep at night. The voice that had once told me he loved me. No, it's not him. Dimitri is gone. This is a monster. Desperately, I tried to think of how I could win here. I even thought of the ghosts I'd summoned on the road. Mark had said I could do that in moments of wild emotion and that they'd fight for me. This was as wild as emotion could get, yet I couldn't seem to call them. I honestly had no clue how I'd done it before, and all the wishing in the world couldn't make it happen now. Damn, what good were terrifying powers if I couldn't use them to my advantage? Instead, I pulled the DVD player off its shelf, cords ripping from the wall. It wasn't much of a weapon, but I was desperate now. I heard a strange primal battle scream, and some distant part of me realized I was making it. Again, I ran at Dimitri, swinging the DVD player as hard as I could. It probably would have hurt a little if it had hit him. It didn't. He intercepted it again, taking it from me and throwing it down. It smashed to pieces on the floor. In the same motion, he grabbed a hold of my arms to stop me from hitting or reaching for something else. His grip was hard, like it could break my bones, but I kept struggling. He tried reason again.
I'm not going to hurt you, Rosa. Please stop.
Rosa, the old nickname. The name he'd first called me when we'd fallen prey to Victor's lust charm, both of us wrapped naked in each other's arms. This isn't the Dimitri you knew. My hands were incapacitated, so I struck out with my legs and feet as best I could. It didn't do much. Without full use of the rest of my body for balance, I had no force to throw into my kicks. For his part, he looked more annoyed than truly concerned or angry. With a loud sigh, he grabbed me by the shoulders and flipped me around, pressing me against the wall and immobilizing me with the full force of his body. I struggled a little, but was as pinned as the Strigoi had been when the others and I had gone hunting. The universe had a sick sense of humor.
Stop fighting me.
His breath was warm against my neck, his body right up against mine. I knew his mouth was only a couple inches away.
I'm not going to hurt you.
I gave another fruitless shove. My breath was coming into ragged gasps, and my head injury throbbed. You'll have to understand if I have a hard time believing that.
If I wanted you dead, you'd be dead.
Now if you're going to keep fighting, I'll have to tie you up. If you stop, I'll let you stay unrestrained.
Aren't you afraid I'll escape?
No.
His voice was perfectly calm, and chills ran down my spine.
I am not.
We stood like that for almost a minute, deadlocked. My mind raced. It was true that he probably would have killed me already if that were his intent, yet that gave me no reason to believe I was even remotely safe. Nonetheless, we were at a draw in this fight. Okay, draw wasn't entirely accurate. I was at a draw. He was toying with me. My head was throbbing where his blow had landed, and this pointless fighting would only take a further toll. I had to regain my strength in order to find a way to escape, if I lived that long. I also needed to stop thinking about how close our bodies were. After our months of being so careful not to touch, this much contact was heady. I relaxed in his hold. Okay. He hesitated before letting me go, probably wondering if he could trust me. The whole moment reminded me of when we'd been together in the little cabin on the periphery of the Academy's grounds. I'd been raging and upset, brimming with spirit's darkness. Dimitri had held me down then, too, and talked me out of that horrible state. We had kissed, then his hands had lifted my shirt, and no, not here. I couldn't think about that here. Dimitri finally eased up, releasing me from the wall. I turned around, and all my instincts wanted to lash out and attack him again. Sternly, I reminded myself to bide my time so that I could gain more strength and information. Even though he'd let me go, he hadn't moved away. We were only a foot apart. Against my better judgment, I found myself taking him in again, like a hat on the street. How could he be the same and yet so different? I tried my best not to focus on the similarities. His hair, the difference in our heights, the shape of his face. Instead, I concentrated on the Strigoi features. The red in his eyes and pallor of his skin. I was so fixated on my task that it took me a moment to realize he wasn't saying anything either. He was studying me intently, like his eyes could look right through me. I shivered. It almost seemed as though I captivated him the same way he captivated me. That was impossible, though. Strigoi didn't possess those kinds of emotions, and besides, the thought of him still having any affection for me was probably just wishful thinking on my part. His face had always been hard to read, and now it was overlaid with a mask of cunning and coldness that made it truly impossible to know what was on his mind.
"Why did you come here?"
he asked at last. "Because you hit me on the head and dragged me here. If I was going to die, I was going to go in true Rose style." The old Dimitri would have cracked a smile or given an exasperated sigh. This one remained impassive.
"That's not what I meant, and you know it. Why are you here?"
His voice was low and dangerous. I thought Abe was scary, but there was no competition at all. Even Zmei would have backed off. "In Siberia? I came to find you."
"I came here to get away from you."
I was so shocked that I said something utterly ridiculous. Why? Because I might kill you?
The look he gave me showed that he thought that was indeed a ridiculous thing to say.
No. So we wouldn't be in this situation. Now we are, and the choice is inevitable.
I wasn't entirely sure what this situation was.
Well, you can let me go if you want to avoid it.
He stepped away and walked toward the living room without looking back at me. I was tempted to try to do a sneak attack on him, but something told me I'd probably only make it about 4 feet before getting backhanded. He sat down in one of the luxurious leather armchairs, folding his 6'7" frame up as gracefully as he'd always done. God, why did he have to be so contradictory? He had the old Dimitri's habits mixed with those of a monster. I stayed where I was, huddled against the wall.
Not possible anymore. Not after seeing you now.
Again, he studied me. It felt strange. Part of me responded with excitement to the intensity of his gaze, loving the way he surveyed my body from head to toe. The other part of me felt dirty, like slime or muck was oozing over my skin as he studied me.
You're still as beautiful as I remember, Rosa. Not that I should have expected anything different.
I didn't know what to say to that. I'd never really had a conversation with a Strigoi, short of trading a few insults and threats in the midst of a fight. The nearest I'd come was when I'd been held captive by Isaiah. I actually had been tied up then, and most of the talking had been about him killing me. This, well, it wasn't like that, but it was still definitely creepy. I crossed my arms over my chest and backed up against the wall. It was the closest I could come to some semblance of a defense. He tilted his head, watching me carefully. A shadow fell across his face in such a way that it made the red in his eyes hard to see. Instead, they looked dark, just like they used to. Endless and wonderful, filled with love and bravery.
You can sit down, he said.
I'm fine over here.
Is there anything else you want?
For you to let me go? For a moment, I thought I saw a bit of that old wryness in his face, the kind he'd get when I made jokes. Studying him, I decided I'd imagined it.
No, Rosa. I meant, do you need anything here? Different food, books, entertainment?
I stared incredulously.
You make it sound like some sort of luxury hotel.
It is, to a certain extent. I can speak to Galena, and she'll get you anything you wish.
Galena? Dimitri's lips turned up in a smile. Well, kind of. I think his thoughts were fond, but the smile conveyed none of that. It was chilling, dark, and full of secrets. Only my refusal to show weakness before him stopped me from cringing.
Galena is my old instructor, back from when I was in school.
She's Strigoi?
Yes. She was awakened several years ago, in the fight in Prague. She's relatively young for Strigoi, but she's risen in power. All of this is hers.
Dimitri gestured around us. And you live with her? I asked, curious in spite of myself. I wondered exactly what kind of relationship they had, and to my surprise, I felt jealous. Not that I had reason to. He was a Strigoi, beyond me now, and it wouldn't be the first time a teacher and student had gotten together.
I work for her. She was another reason I returned here when I was awakened. I knew she was Strigoi, and I wanted her guidance.
And you wanted to get away from me? That was the other reason, right? His only answer was a nod of his head. No elaboration. Where are we? We're far from Novosibirsk, right?
Yes. Galena's estate is outside the city.
How far? That smile twisted a little.
I know what you're doing, and I'm not going to give you that sort of information.
Then what are you doing? I demanded, all of my pent-up fear bursting out as anger. Why are you holding me here? Kill me or let me go? And if you're going to just lock me up and torture me with mind games or whatever, then I really would rather you kill me.
Brave words.
He stood up and began pacing once more.
I almost believe you.
They're true, I replied defiantly. I came here to kill you. And if I can't do that, then I'd rather die.
You failed, you know. On the street.
Yeah, I kind of figured that out when I woke up here. Dimitri made an abrupt turn and was suddenly standing in front of me, moving with that lightning-fast Strigoi speed. My Strigoi nausea had never gone away, but the more time I spent with him, the more it faded to a low-level sort of background noise that I could more or less ignore.
I'm a little disappointed. You're so good, Rose. So very, very good. You and your friends going around and taking down Strigoi caused quite a stir, you know. Some Strigoi were even afraid.
But not you?
When I heard it was you...
He turned thoughtful, eyes narrowing.
No, I was curious, wary. If anyone could have killed me, it would have been you. But like I said, you hesitated. It was your ultimate test of my lessons, and you failed.
I kept my face blank. Inside, I was still beating myself up over that moment of weakness on the street. I won't hesitate next time.
There won't be a next time. And anyway, as disappointed as I am in you, I'm still glad to be alive, of course.
You aren't alive, I said through gritted teeth. God, he was so, so close to me again. Even with the changes to his face, the lean and muscled body was the same.
You're dead. Unnatural. You told me a long time ago you'd rather die than be like this. That's why I'm going to kill you.
You're only saying that because you don't know any better. I didn't either back then.
Look, I meant what I said. I'm not playing your game. If I can't get out of here, then just kill me, okay? Without warning, he reached out and ran his fingers along the side of my face. I gasped. His hand was ice cold, but the way he touched me, again, it was the same. Exactly the same as I remembered. How is this possible? So similar, yet so different. All of a sudden, another of his lessons came to mind, about how Strigoi could seem so, so like those you'd once known. It was why it was so easy to hesitate.
Killing you? Well, it's not that simple, he said.
His voice dropped to a low whisper again, like a snake slithering against my skin.
There's a third option. I could awaken you.
I froze and stopped breathing altogether.
No.
It was the only thing I could say. My brain couldn't come up with anything more complex, nothing witty or clever. His words were too terrifying to even begin to ponder.
No.
You don't know what it's like. It's amazing. Transcendent. All your senses are alive. The world is more alive.
Yeah, but you're dead.
Am I?
He caught hold of my hand and placed it over his chest. In it, I could feel a steady beating. My eyes widened.
My heart beats. I'm breathing.
Yeah, but...
I tried desperately to think of everything I'd ever been taught about Strigoi. It's not really being alive. It's dark magic reanimating you. It's an illusion of life.
It's better than life.
Both of his hands moved up and cupped my face. His heartbeat might have been steady, but mine was racing.
It's like being a god, Rose. Strength. Speed. Able to perceive the world in ways you could never imagine. And immortality. We could be together. Forever.
Once that was all I'd ever wanted. And deep inside of me, some part still wished for that. Wished desperately to be with him for all time. Yet, it wouldn't be the way I wanted it. It wouldn't be like it used to be. This would be something different, something wrong. I swallowed.
No.
I could barely hear my own voice, barely even form the words with him touching me like that. His fingertips were so light and gentle.
We can't be. We could.
One of his fingers trailed down the side of my chin and came to rest on the artery in my neck.
I could do it quickly. There'd be no pain. It'd be done before you even knew it.
He was probably right. If you were forced to become Strigoi, you had the blood drained from you. Then, a Strigoi would usually cut himself and bring that blood to your lips. Somehow, I imagined I'd pass out before I was even half drained.
Together forever.
The world blurred a little. I don't know if it was because of my head trauma or the terror coursing through my body. I had envisioned 100 scenarios when I set out after Dmitri. Becoming a Strigoi hadn't been one of them. Death, his or mine, had been the only thought consuming me, which had been stupid on my part. My sluggish thoughts were interrupted when the door suddenly opened. Dmitri turned, shoving me away hard so that he stood protectively in front of me. 2 people entered, shutting the door before I could even consider running for it. One of the newcomers was a Strigoi, a guy. The other was a human woman carrying a tray, her head bowed down. I recognized the Strigoi immediately. It was hard not to. His face haunted my dreams. Blonde hair, about the length of Dimitri's, hung over the side of a face that looked like he'd been in his early 20s when he turned. He had apparently seen Lissa and me when we were younger, but I had only seen him twice before. Once had been when I fought him on the Academy's grounds. The other time was when I'd encountered him in the cave that other Strigoi were using as a hangout. He was the one who had bitten and turned Dmitri. The guy barely spared me a glance and instead turned the full force of his anger on Dmitri.
"What the hell is going on?"
I had no trouble understanding him. He was American.
"You're keeping some pet up here?"
"It's none of your concern, Nathan."
Dmitri's voice was ice. Earlier, I thought he conveyed no emotion in his words. Now I realized it was just more difficult to detect. There was a clear challenge in his voice now, a warning for this other guy to back off.
"Galina gave me permission."
Nathan's eyes drifted from Dmitri to me. His anger turned to shock.
"Her?"
Dmitri shifted slightly, putting himself directly in front of me now. Some rebellious part wanted to snap that I didn't need a Strigoi's protection. Except, well, I kind of did.
"She was at the school in Montana. We fought."
His lips curled back, showing his fangs.
"I would have tasted her blood if that fire-using Maroi brat hadn't been around."
"This doesn't have anything to do with you," replied Dmitri.
Nathan's red eyes were wide and eager.
"Are you kidding? She can lead us to the Dragomir girl. If we finish that line off, our names will be legendary. How long are you going to keep her?"
"Get out," growled Dmitri.
"That's not the request."
Nathan pointed at me.
"She's valuable. If you're going to keep her around as some blood whore plaything, at least share.
Then we'll get the information and finish her."
Dmitri took a step forward.
"Get out of here. If you lay a hand on her, I'll destroy you. I will rip your head off with my bare hands and watch it burn in the sun."
Nathan's fury grew.
"Galina won't allow you to play house with this girl. Even you don't have that much favor."
"Don't make me tell you to leave again. I'm not in a patient mood today."
Nathan said nothing, and the two Strigoi stood there in a staring match. I knew Strigoi's strength and power were partially related to age. Nathan had obviously been turned first. I didn't know by how much, but watching them, I got the feeling that Dmitri might be stronger, or that it was at least a very, very even match. I could have sworn I saw a glimpse of fear in Nathan's red eyes, but he turned away before I could get a good look.
"This isn't over,"
he snapped, moving toward the door.
"I'm talking to Galina."
He left, and for a moment, nobody moved or spoke. Then Dmitri looked at the human woman and said something in Russian. She'd been standing there, frozen. Leaning over, she carefully placed her tray on the coffee table by the couch. She lifted a silver lid up, revealing a plate of pepperoni pizza loaded with cheese. Under any other circumstances, someone bringing me pizza in a Strigoi home would have been ludicrous and funny. Now, in the wake of Dmitri's threat to turn me Strigoi and Nathan's desire to use me to get to Lissa, nothing was funny. Even Rose Hathaway had limits when it came to making jokes. Next to the pizza was a huge brownie, thick with frosting. Food I loved, as Dmitri well knew.
"Lunch," he said. "Not poisoned."
Everything on the tray looked amazing, but I shook my head.
"I'm not going to eat."
He arched an eyebrow.
"Do you want something else?"
"I don't want anything else because I'm not going to eat anything at all. If you aren't going to kill me, then I'll do it myself." It was occurring to me that the sweet's lack of weapons was probably for my own protection as much as theirs.
"By starving to death?"
There was dark amusement in his eyes.
"I'll awaken you long before then."
"Why aren't you just doing it now?"
"Because I'd rather wait for you to be willing."
Man, he really did sound like Abe, except that breaking one's kneecap seemed kind of softcore in comparison. "You're going to be waiting a long time," I said. Dimitri laughed out loud then. His laughter had been rare as a dompier, and hearing it had always thrilled me. Now it no longer had that rich warmth that had wrapped all around me. It was cold and menacing.
"We'll see."
And before I could form a reply, he moved in front of me again. His hands snaked behind my neck, shoving me against him, and he tilted my face up, pressing his lips against mine. They were as cold as the rest of his skin, and yet there was something warm in there too. Some voice in me screamed that this was sick and horrible, but at the same time, I lost track of the world around me as we kissed and could almost pretend we were back together in the cabin. He pulled away as quickly as he'd moved in, leaving me gasping and wide-eyed. Casually, like nothing had happened, he gestured to the woman.
"This is Ina."
She looked up at the sound of her name, and I saw she was no older than me.
"She works for Galina too, and will check in on you. If you need anything, let her know. She doesn't speak much English, but she'll figure it out."
He said something else to her, and she meekly followed him to the door. "Where are you going?" I asked.
"I have things to do. Besides, you need time to think."
"There's nothing to think about." I forced as much defiance into my words as I could. It must not have sounded very fierce, though, because all my speech earned me was one mocking smile before he left with Ina, leaving me alone in my luxurious prison. Chapter 19. For someone who had preached to Dennis about impulse control, I wasn't setting a very good example. Once left alone in the suite, I continued trying everything possible to get out. Emphasis on the try part. Nathan had acted like keeping a prisoner was a rare thing, but from what I could tell, this place had been built to hold people in. The door and window remained impassable, no matter how hard I beat at them or threw objects against them. I didn't bother with the chair this time, and instead used one of the living room's end tables, hoping it would carry some extra heft. It didn't. When that didn't work, I actually tried entering random codes into the door's keypad. Also useless. Finally, exhausted, I collapsed onto the leather sofa and tried to assess my options. The process didn't take very long. I was trapped in a house full of Shugoi. Okay, I didn't know that for sure, but I knew there were at least three here, which was far too many for me. Dimitri had referred to this place as an estate, which I didn't find comforting. Estates were big. The fact that I appeared to be on the fourth floor was proof of that. A big place meant that there could be lots of room for lots of vampires. The one comfort I had was that Strigoi didn't cooperate very well. Finding large groups of them working together was rare. I'd observed it a couple of times, the attack on the academy being one such occasion. They'd come then because the school's wards had dropped, and that had been a big enough incentive for the Strigoi to unite. Even when they did try to work together, the unions were usually short-lived. The friction I'd observed between Dimitri and Nathan was proof of that. Dimitri. I closed my eyes. Dimitri was the reason I was here. I'd come to free him from this state of living death, and had promptly failed, just as he'd said. Now, it appeared I might be on the verge of joining him. Yeah, good job, Rose. I shivered, trying to imagine myself as one of them. Red rings around my pupils, tanned skin gone pale. I couldn't picture it, and I supposed I'd never have to actually see myself if it happened. Strigoi cast no reflections. It would make doing my hair a real pain in the ass. The scariest change of all would be within, the loss of my connection to my soul. Both Dimitri and Nathan had been cruel and antagonistic. Even if I hadn't been around to start the fight, it probably wouldn't have taken long for them to find some other reason to turn on each other. I was combative, but it was always driven by some passion for others. Strigoi fought because they relished the bloodshed. I didn't want to be like that, seeking blood and violence because I enjoyed it. I didn't want to believe that of Dimitri either, but his actions had already branded him as a Strigoi. I also knew what he had to have been eating this whole time to survive. Strigoi could go longer without blood than Moroi, but it had been over a month since he was turned. There was no question he had fed, and Strigoi almost always kill their victims to eat. I couldn't picture that of Dimitri. Not the man I'd known. I opened my eyes. The topic of feeding had brought my lunch to mind. Pizza and brownies. Two of the most perfect foods on the planet. The pizza had long gone cold during my escape efforts, but as I stared at the plate, both it and the brownie looked delicious. If the outside light was any indication, it hadn't been a full 24 hours since Dimitri had caught me, but it was getting pretty close. That was a long time to go without food, and I wanted to eat that pizza badly, cold or not. I didn't really want to starve to death. Of course, I didn't want to become Strigoi either, but this situation was quickly running away from what I wanted. Starvation took a long time, and I suspected Dimitri was right. He'd turned me long before I had a chance to truly starve. I'd have to find some other way to die. God, not that I wanted that at all. And in the meantime, I decided I might as well keep up my strength on the feeble chance I might be able to escape. Once the decision was made, I gobbled down the food in about 3 minutes. I had no idea who Strigoi hired to do their cooking. Hell, Strigoi couldn't even eat regular food, unlike Maroi. But it was fantastic. Some wry part of me noted that I'd been given food that required no silverware. They really had thought of every possible way I might get my hands on a weapon. My mouth was full of my last giant bite of brownie when the door suddenly opened. Ina slipped deftly inside, the door shutting almost immediately. Son of a bitch! Or at least I tried to say that through my mouthful of food. While I'd been debating whether to eat or not, I should have been staking out the door. Dimitri had said Ina would check in on me. I should have been waiting to overpower her. Instead, she'd gotten in while I wasn't paying attention. Once again, I'd slipped up. Just like when she was around Dimitri and Nathan, Ina made very little eye contact. She held a pile of clothes in her arms and paused in front of me, holding them out. Uncertain, I took them from her and set them beside me on the couch. Thanks, I said. Pointing at the empty tray, she actually glanced up at me shyly, a question in her brown eyes. Seeing her straight on, I was surprised at how pretty she was. She might even have been younger than me, and I wondered how she'd ended up being forced to work here. Understanding her query, I nodded. Thanks. She picked the tray up and waited a moment. I wasn't sure why. Then it occurred to me she must be waiting to see if I wanted anything else. I was pretty sure the combination to the lock wouldn't translate very well. I shrugged and waved her off, my mind spinning as I watched her approach the door. I should wait for her to open the door and then jump her, I thought. Immediately, a gut reaction sprang up in me, hesitation at striking out at an innocent. Another thought squashed that one. It's me or her. I tensed. Ina pressed herself close to the door as she punched in the combination, effectively blocking my view. Judging by how long she was punching in numbers, the code appeared to be pretty long. The door clicked open, and I braced myself to act. Then, I decided against it at the last moment. For all I knew, there could be an army of Strigoi out there. If I was going to use Ina to escape, I probably only had one opportunity. I needed to make it count. So, instead of leaping up, I shifted slightly so that I could see beyond her. She was just as fast as before, slipping out as soon as the door unlocked. But in that moment, I caught a glimpse of a short corridor and what looked like another heavy door. Interesting. Double doors on my prison. If I did follow her, that would prevent me from making an immediate escape. She could simply wait by the other locked door, holding out until Strigoi backup showed up. That made things more difficult, but understanding the setup at least gave me a spark of hope. I just needed to figure out what to do with this information, provided I hadn't screwed myself by not acting now. For all I knew, Dimitri was about to walk in and turn me into a Strigoi. I sighed. Dimitri, Dimitri, Dimitri. Looking down, I took the time to actually see what she'd brought me. My current attire wasn't bothering me. But if I stayed here much longer, my jeans and t-shirt were going to get pretty gross. Like Tamara, someone wanted to dress me up. The clothes Ina had brought were all dresses and all in my size. A red silk sheath, a long-sleeved, form-fitting knit dress edged in satin, an empire waist, ankle-length chiffon gown. Oh, great. I'm a doll. Digging deeper into the stack, I discovered there was a few nightshirts and nightgowns tucked in there, as well as some underwear and bras. All of those were satin and silk. The most casual item in the whole lot was a forest green sweater dress, but even it was made of the softest cashmere. I held it up, trying to imagine myself making a daring escape in it. Nope. With a shake of my head, I heedlessly tossed all of the clothes onto the floor. Looked like I'd be wearing grungy clothes for a while. I paced around after that, turning over futile escape plans that I'd already spun around in my head a million times. In walking, I realized how tired I was. Aside from the blackout when Dimitri had hit me, I hadn't slept in over a day. Deciding how to handle this was like deciding how to deal with the food. Let down my guard or not? I needed strength, but each concession I made put me more at risk. At last, I gave in, and as I lay down on the massive bed, an idea suddenly occurred to me. I wasn't totally without help. If Adrian came to visit me in my sleep, I could tell him what had happened. True, I told him to stay away last time. But he'd never listened to me before. Why should this time be any different? I focused on him as hard as I could while I waited for sleep to come, as though my thoughts might act as some sort of bat signal and summon him. It didn't work. There was no visit in my dreams, and when I woke up, I was surprised at just how much that hurt me. Despite Adrian's infatuation with Avery, I couldn't help but recall how kind he'd been to Jill the last time I saw them. He was worried about Lyssa too, and he'd displayed none of his usual carefree bravado. He'd been serious and, well, sweet. A lump formed in my throat. Even if I had no romantic interest in him, I'd still treated him badly. I'd lost both our friendship and any chance of calling for help through him. The soft rustling of paper snapped me from my musings and I jerked upright. Someone was in the living room, his back to me as he sat on the couch, and it took me only a moment to recognize who. Dimitri. "What are you doing here?" I asked, climbing out of bed. In my groggy state, I hadn't even registered the nausea.
"Waiting for you to wake up," he said, not bothering to turn around.
He was overly confident in my inability to inflict damage, as well he should have been. "Sounds kind of boring." I walked into the living room, moving myself far to the side of him and leaning against the wall. I crossed my arms over my chest, again taking comfort in that meaningless protective posture.
"Not so boring. I had company."
He glanced over at me and held up a book. A Western. I think that shocked me almost as much as his altered appearance. There was something so normal about it all. He'd loved Western novels when he was a dampier, and I'd often teased him about wanting to be a cowboy. Somehow, I'd imagined that hobby would go away when he turned. Irrationally hopeful, I studied his face as though I might see some radical change, like maybe he'd turn back to the way he'd been while I slept. Maybe the last month and a half had been a dream. Nope. Red eyes and a hard expression looked back at me. My hope shattered.
"You slept for a long time," he added.
I dared a quick look at the window. Totally black. It was nighttime. Damn, I'd only wanted a 2-hour power nap.
"And you ate."
The amusement in his voice grated at me. "Yeah, well, I'm a sucker for pepperoni. What do you want?" He placed a bookmark in the book and set it on the table.
"To see you."
"Really? I thought your only goal was to make me one of the living dead." He didn't acknowledge that, which was a bit frustrating. I hated feeling like what I had to say was being ignored. Instead, he tried to get me to sit down.
"Aren't you tired of always standing?"
"I just woke up. Besides, if I can spend an hour tossing furniture around, a little standing isn't that big a deal." I didn't know why I was throwing out my usual witty quips. Honestly, considering the situation, I should have just ignored him. I should have stayed silent instead of playing into this game. I guess I kind of hoped that if I made the jokes I used to, I'd get some kind of response from the old Dimitri. I repressed a sigh. There I was again, forgetting Dimitri's own lessons. Strigoi were not the people they used to be.
Sitting's not that big a deal either, he replied. I told you before, I'm not going to hurt you.
Hurt is kind of a subjective term. Then, in a sudden decision to seem fearless, I walked over and sat in the armchair across from him. Happy now? He tilted his head, and a few pieces of brown hair escaped from where he'd pulled it back in a small ponytail.
You still stay beautiful, even after sleeping and fighting.
His eyes flicked down to the clothes I'd tossed on the floor.
You don't like any of them?
I'm not here to play dress-up with you. Designer clothes aren't going to suddenly get me on board with joining the Strigoi Club. He gave me a long, penetrating stare.
Why don't you trust me?
I stared back. Only my stare was one of disbelief. How can you ask that? You abducted me. You kill innocent people to survive. You aren't the same.
I'm better, I told you. And as for innocent...
He shrugged.
No one's really innocent. Besides, the world is made up of predators and prey. Those who are strong conquer those who are weak. It's part of the natural order. You used to be into that, if I remember correctly.
I looked away. Back at school, my favorite non-guardian class had been biology. I'd loved reading about animal behavior, about the survival of the fittest. Dimitri had been my alpha male, the strongest of all the other competitors. It's different, I said.
But not in the way you think. Why should drinking blood be so strange to you? You've seen Moroi do it. You've let Moroi do it.
I flinched, not really wanting to dwell on how I used to let Lyssa drink for me while we lived among humans. I certainly didn't want to think about the rush of endorphins that had come with that, and how I'd nearly become an addict.
They don't kill. They're missing out. It's incredible.
He breathed. He closed his eyes for a moment, then opened them.
To drink the blood of another. To watch the life fade from them and feel it pour into you. It's the greatest experience in the world.
Listening to him talk about killing others increased my nausea. It's sick and wrong. It happened so fast that I didn't have any time to react. Dimitri leapt out and grabbed me, pulling me to him and spreading me out on the couch. With his arm still wrapped around me, he positioned himself so that he was half beside me and half on top. I was too stunned to move.
No, it's not. And that's where you have to trust me. You'd love it. I want to be with you, Rose. Really be with you. We're free of the rules that others put on us. We can be together now. The strongest of the strong. Taking everything we want. We can eventually be as strong as Galena. We could have a place just like this. All our own.
While his bare skin was still cold, the press of the rest of his body against mine was warm. The red in his eyes practically gleamed while this close. And as he spoke, I saw the fangs in his mouth. I was used to seeing fangs on Moroi, but on him, it was sickening. I briefly toyed with the idea of trying to break free, but promptly dismissed it. If Dimitri wanted to hold me down, I would stay down. I don't want any of this, I said.
Don't you want me?
He asked with a wicked smile.
You wanted me once.
No, I said, knowing I lied.
What do you want, then? To go back to the academy? To serve Moroi, who will throw you into danger without a second thought? If you wanted that kind of life, why did you come here?
I came to free you.
I am free, he responded. And if you'd really intended to kill me, you would have.
He shifted slightly, resting his face close to my neck.
You couldn't.
I messed up. It won't happen again.
Suppose that were true. Suppose you were able to kill me now. Suppose you were even able to escape. What then? Will you go back home?
Will you return to Lyssa and let her continue bleeding spirits' darkness into you?
I don't know, I replied stiffly. And it was the truth. My plans had never gone past finding him.
It will consume you, you know, as long as she continues to use her magic. No matter how far away you go, you'll always feel the side effects. At least as long as she's alive.
I stiffened in his arms and moved my face away. What's that mean? Are you going to join Nathan and hunt her down?
What happens to her is no concern of mine, he said. If you were awakened, Lyssa would no longer be a threat to you. You'd be free. The bond would break.
And what would happen to her? She'd be left alone.
Like I said, that's no concern of mine. Being with you is.
Yeah? Well, I don't want to be with you. He turned my face toward him so that we were looking at each other again. Once more, I had that weird feeling of being with Dimitri and not with Dimitri. Love and fear. He narrowed his eyes.
I don't believe you.
Believe what you want. I don't want you anymore. His lips quirked into one of those scary, smirking smiles.
You're lying. I can tell. I've always been able to.
It's the truth. I wanted you before. I don't want you now. If I kept saying it, it would be true. He moved closer to me, and I froze. If I shifted even half an inch, our lips would touch.
My exterior. My power. Yes, that's different. Better. But otherwise, I'm the same, Rosa. My essence hasn't changed. The connection between us hasn't changed. You just can't see it yet.
Everything's changed. With his lips so close, all I kept thinking about was that brief, passionate kiss he'd given me the last time he was here. No. 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 Don't think about that.
If I'm so different, then why don't I force you into an awakening? Why am I giving you the choice?
A snappy retort was on my lips, but then it died. That was an excellent question. Why was he giving me the choice? Strigoi didn't give their victims choices. They killed mercilessly and took what they wanted. If Dimitri truly wanted me to join him, then he should have turned me as soon as he had me. More than a day had passed, and he'd showered me with luxury. Why? If he turned me, I had no doubt that I'd become as twisted as him. It would make everything a lot simpler. He continued when I remained silent.
And if I'm so different, then why did you kiss me back earlier?
I still didn't know what to say, and it made his smile grow.
No answer. You know I'm right.
His lips suddenly found mine again. I made a small sound of protest and tried vainly to escape his embrace. He was too strong. And after a moment, I didn't want to escape. That same sensation as before flooded me. His lips were cold, but the kiss burned between us. Fire and ice. And he was right. I did kiss him back. Desperately, that rational part of me screamed that this was wrong. Last time, he'd broken the kiss before too much could happen. Not this time. And as we continued kissing now, that rational voice in me grew smaller and smaller. The part of me that would always love Dimitri took over, exulting in the way his body felt against mine. The way he wound my hair around one of his hands, letting the fingers get tangled up. His other hand slid up the back of my shirt, cold against my warm skin. I pushed myself closer to him and felt the pressure of the kiss increase as his own desire picked up. Then, in the midst of it all, my tongue lightly brushed against the sharp point of one of his fangs. It was like a bucket of cold water tossed upon me. With as much strength as I could muster, I jerked my head away, pulling out of the kiss. I could only guess that his guard had been momentarily down, allowing me that small escape. My breathing was heavy. My whole body still wanting him. My mind, however, was the part of me in control, for now at least. God, what had I been doing? It's not the Dimitri you knew. It's not him. I'd been kissing a monster, but my body wasn't so sure.
No, I murmured, surprised by how pathetic and pleading I sounded. No, we can't do this.
Are you sure?
He asked.